missed that one that was just dicta in that ruling because the court went on to hold that because of the pleadings that they could not hold usury in that case. And, Your Honor, Bilesheim also submits that that is just a wrong interpretation of 5069.1.03. If I may read to the court, 5069.1.03 states specifically, when no specified rate of interest is agreed upon by the parties, and then lists two separate examples. One, interest at the rate of 6% per annum shall be allowed on all written contracts, ascertaining the sum payable from and after the time when the sum is due and payable. And two, and on all open accounts from the first day of January after the same are made. Your Honors, Bilesheim submits that 5069.1.03 to not come into effect only takes an agreement, does not take a written agreement, as the El Paso court has previously held in their dicta opinion.
Counsel, you make it appear, maybe I have, that it's all the fault of the buyer for not reading his mail. Would it be asking too much of merchants, and I'm not talking about Bilesheim, because I don't know Bilesheim, to talk about a contract when they make one?
Your Honor, I believe that that would be certainly the ideal aspect. But because of the situation of merchants and because of the course of dealing between merchants, that is not always the case, and therefore that's why
it's better not to bother about it, just sell it. And perhaps your sales price is not Bilesheim but others. The price is so high at some of these merchants that it includes interest that they pay and bad accounts and everything else. And if they get interest, that's just something on the cake. And we don't want to talk about that when we're selling you this thing, but we're going to slip it in the bill.
Your Honor, certainly that is not a better situation. Certainly that is a better situation than what we have here. That's a better situation because as both parties realize and this court realizes, if that was the case, we wouldn't be here today before this court. And that certainly is the ideal situation, but as this court knows, that many times people enter into agreements that aren't the ideal situation, and it is the responsibility of the courts to decide what the law is. And I would agree with the Chief Justice that certainly that would be something that should have been done in this case. And again, what should have been done is that Mr. Vanderhoof and later Preston Farm and Ranch should have said, hey, wait a minute, you're charging too much. This isn't what we agreed to. Let's cut the deal out. This isn't an agreement where after the first shipment, a controversy arose. This is an agreement whereby the parties continued a course of action for a year, and then the controversy arose. Another point I would like to bring to the court's attention is a point that has been briefed, not in my brief, but in the amicus brief filed in this case, and the authorities that the burden is on the defendant, which is Ken Vanderhoof and Preston Farm and Ranch, in cases of this type to prove lack of agreement. The record is clear, and the findings of fact by the trial court and by the Court of Civil Appeals is clear that Preston Farm and Ranch and Ken Vanderhoof did not sustain this burden to prove there was not an agreement. The only proof they could come up with was that Mr. Vanderhoof did not read these invoices, and nobody told him specifically to his face in a phone conversation that these things were being charged. Your Honors, it is Bilesheim's position that an agreement was entered in this case. An agreement was entered first with Mr. Vanderhoof, who was running a business, unincorporated business, for 12% interest. Bilesheim admits that the agreement for 12% interest at the time was usurious under the laws of Texas, which provide an individual can only contract for rates up to 10%. In November, in the following November, some 7 months later, Mr. Vanderhoof called and said that he was incorporating. Now, from now on, billed to Preston Farm and Ranch, Inc. At this time, many invoices had gone back and forth. Many payments had been made. Mr. Vanderhoof, or his bookkeeper, certainly knew the terms of the agreement with Biozyme, and therefore had knowledge, had specific knowledge, before they entered into this agreement, that there was an agreement to pay the 12%, which, at the laws of Texas at that time for corporations, was not usurious. Biozyme comes before this court and states that the trial, both the trial court and the Court of Civil Appeals in this case, make correct decisions of law and correct rulings, and such should be confirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The rebuttal argument from the petitioner.
Your Honor, the way I perceive Biozyme's argument in this case is that in Texas, it's okay to charge usurious interest, and that you can charge it with immunity unless you get caught the first time. That's really what the argument is. If you send out a statement, a monthly statement that has usurious terms on it, and this is not just different terms like kind of limited warranty or like in the Amarillo case, trying to put a venue provision in a monthly statement. We're talking about making a charge that our legislature until really a few months ago, since the inception of this republic, has held to be a criminal act.
Counselor, when did this business started? Was it salesman called on Vanderhoof to talk catalog, or how did they ever come together in the first place?
Your Honor, that's not in the record, but I think that a salesman had called on, that's the best I recall.
But the record doesn't close it, so we can't consider it.
Well,
they're not in the record how they first got together.
No, sir, it's not in the record. So we're talking about, really that's the bottom line. Biozyme saying, well, if Mr. Vanderhoof would have been smart enough and alert enough or whatever to discover this on the first monthly statement, he could have sued us and recovered, no question about it. But because we sneaked it by him unilaterally, and even though the testimony and the record shows he never knew about it, uncontradicted. But since there's a lapse of time, we should be able to benefit from our wrongdoing. Besides that, just that argument, the Section 2.
Well, now, something else worries me, counsel. Did Vanderhoof incorporate so he could be charged 18%?
No, sir, Your Honor. I don't.
That's not in the record.
Not in the record at all.
That has happened.
yes, sir, I understand.
All right.
No, I don't believe that was any consideration. The Chief Justice put a question to my learned counsel that says, shouldn't a merchant talk about a contract when it's made? Well, in this case, the term, on the invoices, had the description of the goods, had the price, the amount, the date shipped, the date received, and it had the terms. What were the terms? It says the term charge. C-H-A-R-G-E. If Biozyme Enterprises wanted to charge interest, wasn't it incumbent upon them in this, which may be a confirmation or acceptance, may not be, but certainly monthly statements are. But why shouldn't it have been incumbent upon them to put charge, one, uh, payable within 30 days. If you don't pay it, we're going to charge you 1% a month. So when the guy got to this, he looked at this and said, yep, I'm going to charge this, and it's going to cost me if I don't pay him. I would submit that there are certain terms that are too important that in Texas law, because, and some of our rules are peculiar because, for example, like venue, there ought to be a per se rule that they are material variations of the oral agreement. I think, and the courts, without having really discussed 2.207, have implied that. One of them is venue. They said, unless you sign an agreement to pay in a particular county goods, we're not going to let a unilateral insertion of venue become a term of the contract. What about waiver of warranty? A lot of cases on that. Certainly interest. What I submit that the significance of this case is, it's going to open the door to any merchant dealing with in these goods to start inserting any kind of different terms that act to the detriment of the purchaser, and would put the burden on the purchaser not to check confirmation statements, that's not what we're talking about here, not to check written acceptances, because at that time the people who are negotiating the contract are involved. It's going to put the burden upon bookkeeping departments to hire lawyers to make sure somebody doesn't slip in an additional or different term. And I submit that that was not the intent of the legislature in this case.
Counsel, you seem to have joined issue on the fact that the question is whether or not this stamp terms on the statement were made a part of the contract. And I want to go back to this comment number 6 to ask if there's any evidence in the record about what the range of trade practice is that is referred to in that comment. Is there any evidence in our record about what the range of trade practice is?
Absolutely none, Your Honor. None. What happened in this case, these matters were brought up as an afterthought. I'll just be perfectly candid with the court. When this case was tried, no one had ever heard of...
Sounds like every contention in this case was brought up as an afterthought.
It's exactly right, except for usury. I think I read the Waco...
I didn't believe that one, wouldn't you?
Well, I read the Waco Court of Civil Appeals opinion in Houston Sash and Door in the Texas Weekly Lawyer's Digest about 10 days before this case was tried. So it's certainly shed a new light on it. I think one thing that's important, maybe I didn't emphasize this too much, or enough, for 2.207 to be operative, whether or not, when we're talking about additional terms, that's only operative in written if the additional different terms are contained in a seasonable acceptance or seasonable acceptance of the offer or acknowledgement of the offer. And I submit to the court that unquestionably monthly statements are not a written seasonable acceptance of an offer or a confirmation of an offer. It's just a statement of the account. Thank you.
Counsel, the original invoice is in evidence.
Yes, Your Honor.
They have a statement on there that all accounts are due in 30 days.
Well, now the original, I'm differentiating. I call the invoices what was delivered with the goods.
With the goods when shipped.
Right.
Okay.
No, they are in evidence, and they only provide they have a provision of their terms, colon, chart. There is absolutely no notation on the invoices of any interest, any agreements paying interest or anything else. In fact, even on the monthly statements, the Biozyme did not start charging of interest until, I think, about 6 months after the first time that they could have under that, under the language.
But the question is, when they ship the goods, did they contemplate payment within 30 days? Was there a statement on the invoice, which is, as is on most invoices, that the payment is due within 30 days?
No, sir, Your Honor. The invoice, it just say charge. That's it. As far as the terms of payment. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted on written briefs. Oral argument for both parties. You'll be excused from council table.